The movie West Side Story turns 50 this month, even as its memorable characters are frozen in their youth. The Jets and the newly arrived Puerto Rican Sharks in 1950s New York. The film picked up 10 Academy Awards, including one for Rita Moreno, who played Anita, girlfriend of shark leader Bernardo, he of the impossibly tight pants, she the impossibly high kicks, as they lead the wild mambo at high school dance. The film was an adaptation of the Broadway play. It was directed by Robert Wise and Jerome Robbins, who reportedly almost suffered a nervous breakdown making it. In fact, the breakdowns were plentiful, as we learn in Rita Moreno's new one-woman show. In it, she tells of her own coming to America from Puerto Rico at the age of 5, and the pretty extraordinary life that followed. The show, written by Tony DeConi, is called Rita Moreno, Life Without Makeup. It's playing at the Berkeley Rep in Berkeley, California, and Rita Moreno joins us to tell us more. Welcome.
Hello, Robin. Thank you.
I just have to start by asking about West Side Story, even though, you know, there's so much else to this big life that you've lived.
But, it's really rather important because we are commemorating the 50th year, 5-0, of West Side Story, and the fact that it just won't go away. It's really quite remarkable.
I was struck in hearing your story how closely your own life mirrored that of Anita's. I mean, you write about when you were a little girl running down the streets in New York, zigzagging to avoid gangs.
Yeah, that's how I came home from school every day. I got a lot of exercise, as I say in the play, because I had to zigzag every half block to avoid the gangs of kids who owned those sidewalks.
But what about actually making a movie about this? I mean, you have to know that I, to this day, refer to things as the Anita moment, when someone tries to bridge a divide. They do a nice thing like Anita did when she goes to the candy store to try to warn Tony, what's going on, but she's roughed up
by the Jets.
Bernardo's tramp.
Bernardo's pig.
Ryan Spick.
Don't do that.
Oh, tooth pierced ear.
Garlic mouth.
But in remembering that you were doing this scene as a Puerto Rican woman that might have been, roughed up at times, what was that like for you to do that scene?
Doing the scene was really difficult. We rehearsed it for a number of days first, and then we shot it for a number of days. And I had heard myself called all these dreadful racist names for days and days and days, and it just got to me at some point, and once we finished a part of the scene, I just broke down in tears, and I couldn't stop crying, and all those wounds, those scars that really were not healed, just erupted. Just in the middle of the scene, I started to cry and cry, and I could not stop. So finally, the director, Robert Wise, decided to call an early lunch so that I could gather myself, as it were, because when I cry, boy, I am not a pretty crier. It took a while to repair me before we could continue with the scene.
Well, what about the fact that, I mean, this is the first time many Americans are seeing Puerto Ricans portrayed, if they hadn't seen the, Broadway show, and there was one number 10 pancake makeup everyone had to use.
That's right.
You had to have the same accents. Tell us about that.
Well, Jerome Robbins wanted a real contrast between the Jets and the Sharks. He actually had the Jet gang wear ultra pale makeup. And then he insisted that all of the Hispanic characters speak with an accent. Well, some of us do and some of us don't. He also insisted that we be exactly the same color, which is absurd, of course, because we're all many different colors. But we were stuck with that. You wanted to be in the film. That's what you had to put up with. And I felt it was important enough to be in the film and just live with the things that I didn't like, because this was indeed the first film about the Puerto Ricans. You just never saw a film about them, ever, in any context.
Well, there's so much else we learn in your show. First of all, that dance scene that is so incredible also almost killed you all. Y'all had injuries and tore things.
Well, Jerome Robbins dancers almost always end up with injuries. It's just it's not possible to do Jerome Robbins choreography without eventually ending up with splints on you or there wasn't one of us who wasn't at one point swathed in ace bandages. My knees took a terrible beating. And it's not just that the steps were so difficult, but because he made us do them so much. You know, sometimes he would get a bug up his behind, and he would make one of us just repeat a step 30, 40, 50 times. He was very well known for this. But I have to tell you that if he were alive and he asked me to do something for him right now, I would drop everything. He was a genius.
Well, something else if I'd ever have the chance, I'd want to ask you. How did you feel in the Puerto Rican gang in the movie that Natalie Wood, who was not Puerto Rican, was chosen to be Maria?
Well, how do you think I felt?
Okay. Well,
let's put it that way.
And a beautiful woman, and, you know, what a loss. But, yeah, I wondered about that.
I think all of us felt it was a very odd kind of casting, but we had no say in that whatsoever, none. Natalie Wood actually originally turned it down, and they finally made an offer that she just couldn't refuse, and then regretted it because she felt that she was out of her canon. She was.
Well, and then, you know, there's another actress that makes her way into this storyline, Chita Rivera. We've spoken to her on this program. She was, of course, Anita on Broadway. You have the part of Anita, not her. And what was that like?
Well, it was difficult for me. Obviously, it was awful for Cheetah. I mean, if I had been Cheetah, I would have wanted to kill me, which she kind of did at one point. She said so in her play.
Sure.
But Tony Mordente, at that time, who was playing one of the Jets, was married to Cheetah at that time. So that made it very uncomfortable for me and for him, for that matter. And ultimately, it really stood between my befriending the Jets. Jerome Robbins had encouraged us anyway to stick to our own kind, as Anita says in the song, A Boy Like That. And it was kind of difficult. Nevertheless, I have to tell you that I've never laughed so hard. I've never had such a good time. It was a great, great experience.
Welcome back. That's Rita Moreno as Anita in the 1961 film West Side Story. She'd win an Oscar for the role and later add an Emmy, a Tony, a Grammy. But did you know a great love was Marlon Brando? Or that after playing a prostitute in Carnal Knowledge, Oscar the Grouch propositioned her? Just a few of the things we learn in the new one-woman play, Rita Moreno, Life Without Makeup, now at the Berkeley Rep in Berkeley, California, and written by Tony Taccone, artistic director of the Rep. It's the story of an acting legend, but it's also a story of immigrants. Like the character Anita, Rita Moreno came from Puerto Rico, born Rosita Dolores Alorito. In her career, she wrestled with being typecast because of her Puerto Rican heritage and being proud of it.
We are profoundly passionate people. Pathologically passionate. Everything in excess, nothing in moderation. Where other cultures believe in restraint and self-control, we believe in the principle of constant combustibility. When in doubt, flip out.
Rita Moreno in her one-woman show, Life Without Makeup. And Rita, at one point, you create a caricature of a Puerto Rican, a character you say you sort of kept in your back pocket to pull out at cocktail parties?
It started in West Side Story. We were all doing bits one day, and I suddenly said, okay, picture this. This is a Puerto Rican girl who's auditioning for the bus and truck company of Gypsy. The only problem is she can't sing and she can't dance. And I came up with this number that said, I had a dream about Joe, baby. It's gonna go through, baby. And everybody started to laugh. I was singing Everything's Coming Up Roses. It eventually became a very important part of Terrence McNally's play, The Ritz. And he named her Googie Gomez, which I love that name. And I'm doing her again. You know, we have resurrected her yet again all these years later in the story of my life, because that is what gave me a Tony Award.
Joe!
But it also dovetails with another part of your storyline, which is that people would only see you as someone who would say, Ju, you know, instead of you.
Well, it was my idea of thumbing my nose at all those parts.
And yet, you write about how you were sensitive to the fact, you know, when you were asked to come audition for something like Carnal Knowledge, the film Carnal Knowledge, in which you played, you know, a hooker.
Right.
You know, you worried, am I falling into some sort of utility...
Ethnic.
You know, prostitute.
Yeah. Well, they were all tied together, in my view. Hookers and prostitutes and madams and all that kind of stuff, which I thank goodness that part of my life is over. But the terrible part of being in Hollywood in the early days was having to use accents constantly. Even worse was the fact that I played all ethnic roles. I have played an American Indian many times. I played a Siamese girl from Thailand. I have played Polynesians. None of that made any sense, but in those days, they found themselves one utility ethnic actress or actor, and that's what you would do. That's all you were offered.
You were Tup Tim in the 1956 film King and I.
But she at least ultimately was a beauteous character and, you know, lovely, and there were beautiful songs and gorgeous costumes, and I got to look really, really pretty. And that at least was somewhat different.
Though the man may be my lord and master, though he may study me as hard as he can, the smile beneath my smile he'll never see.
Normally, I was really depicting little Spitfire characters.
Can we touch on your lovely at times and then very sad affair with Marlon Brando? It began in 1954. You met in the makeup department.
At Fox, yeah.
And I want to listen to the show of how you describe your feelings. Let's listen to that first.
I was gone. Head over heels and heels over head. Have you ever been so obsessed with someone that you feel like you can't breathe without them? Marlon felt that way about himself.
That's the biggest laugh in the whole show. I really fooled them there.
Well, but then you go on to say that you did feel that strongly about him.
I was obsessed with him. It was, and the only reason, because my show is really not a dishy show. It's not about gossiping. It's not about naming names. But this man literally shaped my life. And aside from being a cad, he also had an attractive side, which we don't talk about at all, which I want to change that because I just don't think it's fair to depict him only as this caddish guy. He is the man who turned me on to books. You know, he was Henry Higgins to my Eliza.
And he shaped your life in that way, as you said, but you almost took your life.
I tried to take my life at a certain point. Yep.
Ooh.
And I got very close to success, too.
Well, and we're thrilled that didn't happen.
So am I. I wouldn't have had my beautiful daughter, my grandsons. That's all I think about now.
But, you know, you also, I mean, on a much lighter note, you thought you'd get back at him by dating Elvis?
Well, what happened was that, you know, I had found another woman's clothing in his house, and then Elvis spotted me in the commissary at Fox and asked somebody for my phone number and called me up and asked if I wanted to go out with him. And it came at just about the right time, and I said, you bet. And I dated him really only about three times, because compared to Marlon, he was a rather dull boy. You know, he was quite beautiful, and he was kind of sweet, but he was a country boy. And Marlon Brando was Marlon Brando, a Roman coin. So, but it did make its mark. Marlon was just crazed.
And you carried on. I mean, there's so much more in the career. But mm-hmm. you close your work in just a wonderful way.
What I say is something on the order of my husband, who always really looked after me, and that I carry him. He's passed away last year.
Sorry.
And I carry him with me, and that he reminds me of my own worth and my value. And I say I carry him with me along with everything I've ever lost. And I make a list of that.
Well, it includes your mother, your brother, your youth, Brando.
Yep.
Your first kiss, your good knees.
And my good knees.
But also, what a relief, the desire to be anyone other than yourself.
Really, the play is so much about a young person who comes to this country. I was five. And learns very quickly that it's not a good thing to come from somewhere else and to speak another language. And it's really about my evolution, how I denied and cast aside my origins and tried very, very badly to be Elizabeth Taylor or anybody who was very, very American, as I saw it, and how I came to terms with who and what I am. That's what it's really about, identity, about losing it and regaining it.
Rita Moreno, starring in the world premiere of her one-woman show, Rita Moreno, Life Without Makeup, at the Berkeley Rep Theater. Rita Moreno, what a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Robin.
To some we're just loaned material things, they all come with strings, so why bother missing what you've never owned?